Please be seated. Well, friends, it's a privilege to be back with you again. The last time I was here, it was at the tail end of a marathon preaching session. I have to say, though, in hindsight, it was fun. Now, today I'm going to talk about Abraham's sacrifice of Isaac with the title, Give Me the One Whom You Love. Now, many of us are familiar with the story of Abraham being commanded by God to sacrifice Isaac. But looking beyond that, this is one of the milestones in the history of God's covenantal relationship with mankind. This constitutes a high point, and after which, the road in which the covenant community begins to take shape starts here. So I want to go through a very quick summary of the story so far. We all know God tests Abraham, right? Now, whenever you read something in the Bible that says, and after these things, that's your clue. Go read a few verses beforehand. Okay? So, after these things, God tells Abraham, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love. Now, it sounds like a triple redundancy here, no? It's as though God is trying to preempt Abraham, trying to act blur, no? Take your son, where? Which one? Your only son, Isaac. Okay. The son whom you love. And sacrifice him on one of the mountains of Moriah. Or Moriah. How, depends on how you pronounce it. Now, just a quick note. Moriah is not actually a mountain. It is a mountain range. The land of Moriah. To give you a sense of what it is. Now, at this pointer doesn't quite work. So, I'd like to draw your attention. Zoom in on the exact center of the picture. That's where Moriah, the region of Moriah is. Okay? Mountains. The nightmare of every NSF soldier. God tells Abraham, bring Isaac to one of the mountains in the area of Moriah, and whichever mountain I point out to you, there you sacrifice. Okay? Now what's interesting is this. The Bible doesn't exactly tell us what was going through Abraham's mind. It seemed as though he didn't ask questions, right? Starts out early in the morning with Isaac and two other young men with him. Traveled for 3 days and then tells the two young men, you stay here, I'll go on further. Now, in the meantime, please understand that in the 3 days, he had to gather all the resources necessary for sacrifice. Sad to say, there were no 7-Eleven outlets then. So if you want to find firewood, you had to make your own or find your own. So he actually had to take the effort to cut the firewood to make it to get ready for the sacrifice. The one missing ingredient happens to be the most important, the sacrifice itself. Now, this didn't escape Isaac's notice. So Isaac asked him a question. You know, I see the firewood, I see the fire, I see the oil, whatever, all that you need for the sacrifice, I see it. But where's the sacrifice? Where's the animal for the sacrifice? Now, if you were Isaac, Abraham's answer should have unnerved you already, because Abraham answering, God will provide. He didn't answer the question. Okay? Now, if you were sharp and you were sensitive enough, that ought to get you frightened. Because the two male servants were no longer around. It's just you and your dad and the firewood. You can't possibly sacrifice a donkey. Nobody sacrifices a donkey. That leaves you with one remaining frightening possibility. But let's not jump ahead of ourselves. Sure enough, Abraham and Isaac reach the place and they build the altar, and then Abraham prepares to kill Isaac. We pause the narrative here. All right? Now, let's imagine for a moment this is a film. This is a movie. Dramatis personae simply means the persons who are the actors in the movie. All right? The three main actors here are Abraham, no surprise there. Isaac, and of course God. Now let's look at Abraham first. Now we have to remember that Abraham waited a long time for an impossible promise. If you will remember, both he and Sarah were already in their mid to late 90s when Isaac came along. Possibly the only father in the world who ever had to look at his son with reading glasses. Waited a long, long time. CPF long collected already. Factory long closed already. And then he sees his son. impossible promise. And yet, as impossible as it seems, Abraham dared to believe. For this reason, he is regarded as a righteous man. Now, why righteous? Because Abraham wasn't focused on the promise itself. His focus was on the trustworthiness of God. And I will get to this again later on. And then because he dared to believe, he saw for himself God's fulfillment. Now, imagine trusting in an impossible promise of God. People around you think you're stupid, think you're foolish, and then God actually pulls off his promise, actually fulfills his promise. Now, the English expression we use is cock a hoop. The local expression is more familiar to you, yaya. Okay, wow, you'll be swaggering around. No? See, you all say stupid, right? Ah, look at what's happening now. Look who's laughing now. He actually saw God fulfill his promise to him. Now that he has believed an impossible promise from God, now that he has seen for himself how God has fulfilled that promise, he's told to give up that promise. Now, at this point, even the most hardened of hearts will lead you to ask, why? What is going on? Now, Abraham is told to sacrifice Isaac. When he's not told to send him away to some boarding school. He's told to give him up forever. Doesn't this seem cruel? Why does God answer a prayer and then turns out that whatever he answered, that prayer he answered you was a poison drink? Why is it that he gives you he makes you a promise, he gives you a foundation to stand on and then pulls out the carpet from under your feet? Why is it that he fulfills an impossible promise and then proceeds to tell you to give it up? Is God suffering from bipolar disorder? Well, to be fair, it wasn't easy for Abraham either. Remember, 3 days journey, destination unknown. He's told to bring his son to sacrifice on one of the mountains without specifying which one. It's kind of like his initial journey of faith, right? Abraham, I want you to migrate from your hometown. Sure, where? Just go. But what do I tell the ticketing agent? Just go. I will tell you then. Likewise here, sacrifice your son. Where? Just go. I'll tell you which mountain later on. Now, what a contrast it is to modern-day Christianity. You know, today, we demand that God must give us proof. He must give us certainty before we believe. In Abraham's time, it was the other way around. He believed first, the proof came later. I want to suggest to you, you want to follow Christ, that's the life you must be prepared to live. Believe first and then the proof come later, rather than demand that God gives you the proof at once. Not that he didn't have chances to doubt, but yet he obeys. Now why? How was he able to obey? Well, to answer that question, let's go on to our first lesson. The first lesson I want to leave with you. The reality is this, the journey of faith is often one where God doesn't always give you the full picture. That's me putting it diplomatically. You want me to put it bluntly? God seldom gives us the full picture. Now, when he doesn't give you the full picture, what do you do? Immediately, you have one of two responses. One is that you must insist on relying on what you can see. Pretty much what I've just described. Demand that God show you the proof first before you believe. Otherwise, don't talk. Now, it's very human and it's very natural, but this is confidence in the flesh. Seeing is believing, you would insist. But the other reaction is a little bit more radical. You gamble on the trustworthiness of a God you can't see. Now, I know the word gamble has negative connotations. So if that offends you, substitute it for stake your life. You stake your life on the trustworthiness of a God you cannot see. Is it frightening? Well, of course it is. Even in a roller coaster, at least you see where you're going next. Trusting God, you don't even know where he will lead you next, what he will ask you to do next. I simply went up in one altar call and said, Lord, I'm sick and tired of being a 6:30 Christian. I want my faith to count for something. Look where it's got me. You gamble, you stake your life on the trustworthiness of a God you cannot see. But if you do that, that's confidence in the Spirit. I'm not asking you to throw caution to the wind. I'm not asking you to switch off your brain. If anything, I need you to be clear, very, very clear about something. intellect is not the enemy of faith. They have two distinct spheres. They may overlap, but they are not mutually exclusive. It doesn't mean that faith requires you to switch off your brain, as I've said. Far from it. Very often, faith is involved in the exercise of intellect. However, intellect has a practical limit. After that, you've got to make room for the mystery of God. That's where faith and intellect comes together. Now, let's look at Abraham and how he integrated the two together. Abraham was confronted with God's challenge, and that challenge involves trusting in God's promises regarding Isaac's faith, and now trusting God again with regard to the call to sacrifice him. Both messages seem to be from God. Both seem to be contradicting each other. Not very easy to cope with. So I grant you that while logic will never explain and never be able to explain why God expects Abraham to sacrifice Isaac, logic nonetheless helps Abraham to remember that God kept his promise, one. Two, he doesn't change. You put one and two together, you reach the third deduction, if you will. Therefore, because God kept his promise in the past and God doesn't change, therefore the message now must be authentic. Now, this is the reason why Abraham was finally able to obey. Not easy for him, I grant you. You're asked to give up something that you love, something that you have, that is very dear to you, something that if you give it up, a big part of you will die. And yet he was able to obey because of this. He remembered that God was a God of his word, and this God doesn't change. Now, of course, if you read Hebrews, the writer of Hebrews goes on to say that Abraham somehow had the faith that God was able to restore Isaac back to life. Now, we know that from hindsight. Abraham didn't. Now, the second lesson for us, in addition to the fact that God will never give us the full picture and therefore we must obey in faith, is that obedience will always be costly. Now, these are the words of King David in 2 Samuel 24:24. I will not offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God that cost me nothing. Now, I want to suggest to you, if your Christian life has not cost you anything at all, it is a convenient life. And therefore, you don't really know anything about discipleship. I just tossed the bomb in your midst. Real discipleship is always costly. And when I say costly, I mean high price. It will cost you either your money, it will cost you your time, it will cost you your attention, it will cost you your rights. Now, let me tell you, let me digress to mention this. The church is the last place in the world that you should ever talk about rights. You cannot talk about rights and talk about serving one another. You cannot talk about rights and then still talk about washing each other's feet. In a church, if all we talk about is rights, there will be nothing left. It will cost you your rights. And perhaps, in a very frightening sense, it may well cost you your ego. Even your life. But Abraham was prepared to pay that price. And the same invitation and challenge is made to us today. Are we willing to give up that which is dear to us? Okay, that's Abraham. Let's move on to the next character, Isaac. Now, Isaac seems to be rather passive. Not much is said about him, and not much is said by him, other than to ask a very obvious question. Dad, I see the wood, I see the fire, but where's the animal for the sacrifice? Well, it took you that long to notice. But put yourself in his shoes for a moment. Your father evades your obvious question. Already, that ought to raise alarm bells in your head. And after that, he continues the journey. That means he's committed to the sacrifice. He's not going to change his mind. And then, all the materials for the sacrifice are there except for the sacrifice itself. Now, if you believe Isaac to be a sharp person, and this is purely a guess, he would have suspected something by now. And sure enough, in verse 9, we are told that Abraham built the altar there when he reached the place, built the altar there, laid the wood in order, and then bound his son Isaac. and laid him on the altar on top of the sacrifice. Now, put yourself in Isaac's shoes. Even if you were absolutely blur, you were absolutely clueless, surely by that time you will be wondering, what is my father doing tying me up? And then when I'm on the altar, oh, so I'm the sacrifice. Now, what's interesting is what the Bible doesn't say. The Bible doesn't say, and Isaac struggled, but Abraham overcame him. Doesn't say, right? Nothing is said about that. Which means you can deduce that Isaac went along willingly. Now, this is a little bit of an inference, I grant you. Bible doesn't say it. But if Isaac struggled, surely we wouldn't be reading Genesis 22 in the same way anymore. Which means Isaac went along with it. He was a willing party. So Isaac's willingness to give up his own life, in a sense that there was an absence of a description of a struggle, it is the same as Abraham's willingness to give up his son. Both father and son were prepared to give up something that was dear to them. Now, prayerfully, one day we will all exercise the faith, lah. But to be honest with you, I don't dare to say I can. I hope I will. By the grace of God, I will. But by my own strength, I will tell you I don't dare. Okay, so we trust, we draw on strength from the Lord. Now, that's Isaac. Not much to say. So we move on to our third actor in the story, God himself. Now, allow me to take a roundabout route. What if Abraham had not given up Isaac? Truth be told, it wouldn't make a difference to God. God will still be God. But Abraham probably would never have known the depth of his faith. Which brings me to the next point. The entire core message, the whole point of Isaac's sacrifice was not to convince a skeptical God. It's not as though God wasn't sure Abraham would react the way he did. The point of Isaac's sacrifice was to convince a skeptical Abraham. I will get to that later on. But from Abraham's example, we learn that God will often bring us to the edge. I wish this wasn't the case, but I have a book which very accurately describes this. God has never let me down, but he has scared me to death 1,000 times. I think that accurately describes what God does with us. He will bring us to the edge. He will tell us to give up things often very precious to us. And if we give that thing up, a part of us dies. That's how precious it is. Now, before we go any further, I want to make a comparison with what God did in Genesis 22 versus John chapter 3, which was read to us earlier on. Now, in Genesis 22, Abraham gave up his son. In John chapter 3, God gave up his son. And that's where the similarities end. Because in Genesis 22, Abraham got his son back. By contrast, in John chapter 3, God did not. So before we accuse God of being cruel, he went one step further. Now in the case of Genesis 22, because of Abraham's trust, God blessed him and his own trust deepened. So arguably, the test of Genesis 22 was really to deepen Abraham's trust and to prove it to him. It was not to convince God. God already knew. Now in John chapter 3, despite God not getting his son back, there was still a positive outcome. Salvation was made available to you and I. So let me assure you, God is not suffering from any bipolar disorder, nor was he toying with Abraham. He was testing him. Now, this test is different from the kind of test that you and I are familiar with. Now, whenever we talk about testing, we talk about, okay, let's see whether this is this outcome A or outcome B. We're not really sure. Let's see how it goes. Roll the dice and see where it lands. The testing that we read about in Genesis 22 is more relevant to the idea that you're testing in the form of purifying, as in purifying gold or silver. That sort of testing. Okay? So God tested Abraham to convince him, to force him to face the question, which I mentioned earlier, is God worth trusting? And by the way, the same question is still posed to us today. Is God worth trusting? Now, you know the textbook answer. Yes, he is. That brings us to the second question. How far are you willing to go? Sure, you say you trust God, but how far are you willing to go? What are you willing to give up? You see, Abraham's sacrifice of Isaac is not just an isolated incident. It is meant to be a foreshadow of God giving up his son. Genesis 22 is to point to the cross. Some of us find tithing 10% so difficult. Or perhaps some of us may be questioned by our friends, why are you so foolish? You give 10% of your income. You could do a lot with that 10%, you know. Well, I hope your answer to them will be, well, I give 10%, but my God gave 100%. Who gave more? Now, I want to draw us to the concluding segment of the sermon this evening by asking some very hard questions of ourselves. Abraham gave up something he loved or someone he loved. God gave up someone he loved. Is there anything or anyone you need to give up? Now, of course, you'll be reluctant. Perhaps what you're asked to give up is your future. You may be asked to give up your notion of security. Or parents, if the Lord calls your children, you may be called to give up your children. Will you? Don't be too hasty to answer me yet. Okay, I think it is safer to say, Lord, I want to, but please help me. Now, as individuals, that's what we need to ask. Is there anything you need to give up? The next question pertains to us as a community. Is there anything that St. Andrew's Cathedral, specifically the 5 p.m. service, needs to give up? Now, by this, I refer to your perceived identity. All right, what is your perceived identity? What is your idea of what the 5 p.m. service ought to be? Now, sometimes when you talk to people, you have to help them exorcise their notion of glory days. They're still stuck in the past. Last time I church like that. Last time I church like this. Now it's different. Now we have deteriorated. Yeah, sure. Last time, there's a Hokkien expression that says, last time the policeman wear shorts on. Let what is in the past stay in the past. We give thanks to God for what happened in the past, but we look to the future to take hold of what God has in store for us. So to answer that question, we need to ask ourselves another one. Are you willing to be a willing partner? Now, even if you're not willing, God can still fulfill his purpose. But wouldn't it be great if you are a willing participant in that will? Now, we know of King Cyrus of Persia during the Old Testament, during the exile when the people of Israel were kicked over to Babylon and to Persia. God says that King Cyrus is my servant, my instrument. King Cyrus wasn't a Christian, wasn't a believer, wasn't a follower of God. And yet he was used by God to fulfill his purposes. Now, imagine the possibilities if you were a willing partner. That is to say, you're willing to go where God leads you. Individually and as a community, go where God leads you, even if you don't fully understand where or why or how. Even if it costs you a high price. Because whatever opportunity cost you incur in this lifetime, when the Lord returns, he's more than able to make up to you. So let me put this all that I've explained in a diagrammatic form. God challenges Abraham to give up that whom he loves. As a result of that, he was blessed, and in turn, out and by extension, we are all blessed. Now, the fact that we can sit here and worship God means we are part, I mean, in some sense, implies that we are part of the Abrahamic covenant. He was blessed. We were blessed. His faith was deepened. God also gave up that whom he loves. As a result of that, you and I have salvation. Now already, Abraham gives up that whom he loves, there's blessings. God gave up that whom he loves, there's blessings. Imagine the possibilities if you give up what you are prepared to give up what you love. Imagine the blessings. Now, let me paint a picture for you before I close. Now, imagine we are all in heaven. Imagine we have all kept a faith. Imagine we have all been stubbornly obedient to God. Sounds strange, huh? Two very contradictory words. Stubbornly obedient to God. You go up to heaven, a random stranger comes up to you and says, "Hey, thank you. Thank you for your obedience to the Lord. Because of that, I was blessed." And for the life of you, you don't even remember where you met this person. That's what happens when you are prepared to give up that which you love for the Lord. Your blessings may go beyond just your immediate vicinity. Now, I doubt very much Abraham knows me. But yet, because of his obedience, I'm blessed. Now, imagine what your obedience can do. I circle back to the question I started out at the beginning. Are you willing to give up that which you love or that whom you love? Something that's very precious to you. Are you willing to release it to the Lord? Not easy. And so I'm going to ask you to pause in prayer now. We're going to ask God to help us. By our own nature, we are probably unable to do it. It is a very frightening thing to do. And therefore, we need courage and grace from the Lord. But the good news is this. God is willing to help us. He doesn't say, give up something you love and does nothing about it. Because what He has in store for you may well be more than what you give up. So would you please join me in prayer? Lord, what a terrible thing that Abraham was asked to do. But yet, what wonderful and bountiful blessings as a result of his trust in you. So help us to follow his example. Help us, Lord, put into us that resolve to want to trust you the way Abraham did. Give us that courage so that when you lead us to places that we never imagined we would go, we would do so bravely and we would do so out of a desire to please you, to honor you, to glorify you. I pray this blessing of courage, grace, and of strength on my brothers and my sisters in front of me and also upon myself. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.